broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And it's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show, and we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they cannot. All right. What'd you do, bud?
Oh, I forgot to turn up. I'm sorry. I listened to Savoy Brown.
Turn that crap off. Going places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. What happened to the... we're in a world of hurt here, man. Thank you. God almighty. I was just talking to Fred Scotty, who's a great engineer, and I said, Fred, let's go into the studio so that we can create a better and more perfect radio show for our listeners, and let's take a fire axe and start all over again. And he said, that sounds good to me. So coming up in the next couple of weeks, Fred and I are going to take a garden hose, a fire axe, a flamethrower, and
what about chainsaw and stuff?
And a chainsaw. Thank you, bud. That would be good. A chainsaw to everything in here except our video setup. Speaking of that, you can watch our video on Phil TV and HD at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. Get a backstage pass. Watch the show right now as you watch us perform the show in amazement. You'll be agog and aghast. Make sure you stop by our our Mercedes store. It's funny how merchandise and Mercedes flow together. Probably why I've never bought one, but I do buy Jaguars.
Same thing.
Yeah. So I've got here the Phil Hendry Show baseball cap, which is will be available in our merchandise store very, very soon, if it ain't there already. 877-876-PHIL is the number. Bob Green from Fraser Foods is going to be joining us here this hour to talk about retail sales this Labor Day weekend. Very, very important to discuss the economy, and Bob is the guy to do it. And we have him on when we want to get the real boots on the ground retail point of view. Bob, and how are you tonight?
We're doing very well. Thank you for having us on your program.
You're a little distant.
So let me. We've had a very busy day, and we're still processing getting people through the checkout. So it's been a good day, for business. But it is a very busy day, and I apologize if I'm not in a...
Well, I think if you get on there, the phone sounds a little bit better. You're probably just in a lot of people, and it is very hectic there. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, Phil, but again, I apologize if our phone connection is not 100%.
All right. Not a problem. I think it sounds all right. Bob, this is another Labor Day. It's one of those, you know, Labor Days, Memorial Weekends, Christmases, and so forth. These are all these checkpoints, if you will, for retailers. These are these signposts, as Rod Serling would call them, that give us an idea as to how our economy is doing. How is our economy doing?
Well, I think I don't see people holding back. I don't see people... a pinch and a penny this Labor Day weekend. People want to have a good time. People want to have a barbecue. They want to have friends and family over. They want to have. They want to celebrate an American summer holiday weekend in the fashion that they always have, Phil. And to that end, our company has always stood for the American family and supporting families and feeding families and to that end, helping families enjoy these experiences together. So I think looking at how people have been spending their money the past few days, I think we're doing very well.
So when you say you don't see people holding back...
Well, I don't see anybody. I've seen people coming in and getting what I would consider to be a top drawer cut of meat, for instance. People are buying the tri-tips. They're buying the sirloin steaks. A lot of people coming through the line with two, three carts full of food. So there's doesn't seem to be any shortage of people that want to spend money and want to enjoy the weekend. And we're just sorry that we don't have corn on the cob available for this weekend because of how we feel about Native American people, because of the... 200th anniversary, in 1811, Native people joined up to help General Andrew Jackson defeat the British, and yet those very same Native people were eventually sent to to on the Trail of Tears and sent off to these reservations. That is a horrible, horrible thing to think about, Phil.
Well, you're saying it's 200 years since the Native peoples joined with the American fighters in the War of 1812?
That is correct. And the thanks they got for it was to be put on this Trail of Tears eventually and sent to Oklahoma. And I think we need to observe that, and that's why we've certainly taken corn on the cob off of our shelves.
Now, I want to ask you, why you're taking corn on the cob off the shelf, why? Because that's a Native American food?
Not only is it a Native American, was it a food that was developed by Native people, corn on the cob, but it is a food that the settlers of America, the European settlers, have taken over. And I don't see in our use of corn, I don't really see much respect for the origins of this wonderful cuisine, of this wonderful food, with Native people. I see a lot of disrespect. And so we want to have at least one weekend where there isn't that disrespect.
Well, what kind of disrespect are you talking about? Corn on the cob is a traditional summer food.
It most certainly is, Phil, and we sell it most of the summer. But for Labor Day weekend, we're making this statement because, again, it's the 200th anniversary of the volunteering of Native people to join General Jackson in his fight against the British in New Orleans. And we just don't think it's an appropriate way to observe that, having a lot of, white Europeans eating this food, this wonderful food, nurtured for literally filled thousands of years by the Native people of North America, and only to see it taken over by Europeans and eaten in a manner that I think is rather slovenly, to be honest with you.
And how do Native people eat corn on the cob? When you say that we eat it or the Europeans eat it slovenly, I remember that you had said on our show once, people with bad teeth are difficult to look at when they eat corn on the cob.
No, this is a different argument entirely. This doesn't have anything to do with that. This has to do with, and I wish I could articulate it better, Phil. I met a very, very nice man who is a Native American who runs one of the casinos here in California, and they are now, as you know, lending money. And they're lending money immediately. You can borrow money, and I don't want to give the name of it because I don't want anybody to think I'm doing a commercial. But this man was kind to me and helped me out. And so I want people to know the kindness of the Native people and why are we treating this food in a slovenly way. I don't know how else to put it.
Okay, there's two things that are going on here, if you don't mind me saying. You borrowed money from a Native American.
No, this is not a story. This is not a game of Clue. I'm not here to solve some mystery, okay?
Well, you brought up the fact that you borrowed money from this guy.
He's a Native American gentleman who told me about corn on the cob and whites that sit there and smear it all over their faces. No respect at all. Picking it out of their teeth. They take the cob once the corn has been eaten, and they throw the cob on a plate, or they throw it out in the grass, or they just throw it anywhere. There are some individuals who use that cob as an item in the toilet. I don't know how that works.
I don't either. I don't know where you're hearing that.
Well, there are poor whites that use that rind. That part, that uneaten rind from the corn, for hygiene.
And there are whites.
I'm talking about poor people, impoverished whites.
That are using the corn cob for what?
For bathroom hygiene. I think it is a disrespectful way of treating a food that the Native people who are celebrating their 200th anniversary of helping General Jackson in the War of 1812, I think it's a disrespectful way of treating it. And that's why we're not selling corn this weekend. And I wish we were. It's a big seller. But the gentleman that I'm speaking to you about, who is a Native American and has done some things for me.
Did he lend you money? I mean, I don't think that that's a question that I shouldn't ask.
Did he lend me money?
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
And are you not selling corn on the cob or corn? Are you selling any kind of corn?
No, we're not selling any kind.
No canned corn?
No canned corn, no cream of nothing.
Well, so you're not selling corn because you owe this guy money. Is he giving you a break on the interest?
No, Phil, it's got nothing to do with that. I borrowed money from the from this fund that is kept by these Indian gaming people, and I, in borrowing the money, I got to talk to this one guy who was telling me about Native people and corn. And
so you will not be selling any corn on the cob, and what are people saying when they ask you where's the corn on the cob?
I tell them that we don't sell it, and that we're not selling it this weekend, and that I don't really like to express the reasons because people are very political, and people will blame you. They'll punish you for these things. And
then why are you coming on my show and talking about it?
Well, I want people to understand that my motives are good motives. My motives are to
well, why don't you tell the customers that?
Can I just finish for 1 minute?
Go ahead.
I don't want people to feel that my motives are all about, you know, something other than what they are, which is that I want to treat corn that was developed by the Native people with respect and not suck it down the way that we do at a picnic table, and we gnaw on that corn cob like we're animals, and we have it smeared all over our faces. And the butter that we use, we overuse the butter, and then, as I mentioned, there are some poor whites that will take that cob and use it for hygienic reasons. And
I don't know what you're talking about when you say there's some poor whites that use that cob. What are you talking about?
I'm talking about using it in the toilet.
Using a corn cob in the toilet?
Yeah, I think it's for to wipe.
That's correct.
To wipe. All right.
And again, this is all well and good if the Native American people were people that we didn't owe anything to. But we owe them a lot on this, the 200th anniversary.
I know. The 200th anniversary that they volunteered for General Jackson's army as he went to New Orleans and battled the British. And I think that that is a very admirable thing, and it is something that needs to be pointed out. You not selling corn, I fail to see what that has to do with it, other than what you say, you know, if this is true, that white people, when we eat corn, we eat it in a slovenly way. And
this was a crop that was nurtured for many thousands of years, and then whites get a hold of it, and they sit with their elbows spread on a table, and they are gnawing away on this thing and talking to each other with their mouths full of corn and spitting corn. And you can well imagine if you had developed something and then you saw people treating it like it was nothing more than they were eating nothing more than stew or some other kind of cheap food that you don't have to take your time over, you know, like a good steak or something like that, that they were just gnawing and licking and there's no other way I can put it.
All right. So how many Native people have you talked to who have said to you, this is offensive to me?
Well, I've talked to quite a few. I've talked to this gentleman, as I mentioned.
What is this man's name? You don't want to give me his name?
I don't want to give you his name because he's a very good friend of mine. I don't want him to be bothered.
It doesn't have anything to do with the money that you owe him.
No, it doesn't, and I think we can put that to rest, okay, Phil? It doesn't have anything to do with the money that I owe him. I simply want to say that I'm not selling corn on this Labor Day weekend so that European Americans can't go home with it and eat it like they're eating a turkey leg, just gnawing it and then throwing it over their shoulder. There's got to be a little bit more respect.
All right, Bob Green from Fraser Foods, who's not selling corn on the cob this Labor Day weekend in honor of Native Americans who volunteered to join General Jackson's army for the War of 1812. He feels that the way that we, Anglo, or if you will, European Americans, African Americans, anyone that is non-native, the way we eat corn is an insult to the native culture. 877-876-PHIL is our number here. 877-876-7445. By the way, our affiliate spotlight tonight, we put it on KTLK in Los Angeles and WDTW in Detroit, two great stations on the Phil Henry Radio Network. Back with more from Robert Greene here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL. I don't know how many people are going to be buying corn on the cob this Labor Day weekend, but some feel that we should not eat it or buy it out of respect to the native people that first nurtured corn and turned it into a staple. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Henry Show.
We can't fight this fight alone. Give us a call. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445. Call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Robert Greene from Fraser Foods. And Bob, you're doing fine. I understand you're getting over a cold.
Yeah, Phil, I've had a little bit of what you had, I think, some of that summer flu. But, yeah, we're just getting over it.
All right. And we're talking tonight about the Labor Day weekend. And retail sales are doing very, very well. In the middle of retail sales doing very, very well, you've decided to take corn, all corn products.
All of the vegetable corn, that is corn on the cob, corn in the can, any of the organic corn products we're taking off the shelf. We're not taking corn flakes or anything like that.
No, I understand, but the actual vegetable...
That is correct. We're taking it off the shelf as a to honor native people and the 200th year. They're working closely with General Jackson.
Now, this is something I've never heard before. And
well, let me say this, okay?
Because I've never heard of honoring the Native people's commitment and volunteering to General Jackson. I think it's great.
Let me say this, Phil. It's what I want to do, and it's what we are doing, and I would tell you that you're asking me questions. I think I've answered them.
Yes, you have, to a point.
I think I've answered them, and
You brought up the fact that you're not selling corn.
I did. You're absolutely right. And when you asked me why, I told you why. And
but your answer opened up another door.
What do you mean it opened up another door? I told you that we're not selling corn so that we don't continue to insult Native people with the slovenly way that we eat it. That's what I'm telling you. And
all right, let me ask you this. How do your customers who are not Native people, all of the other folks...
Well, you're right about one thing. I did misspeak. I was talking about European Americans, African American people as well. Hispanic American people are a little tougher because they have some Native blood in them, and so I don't want to insult them by not selling them corn on the cob.
Well, do you sell corn on the cob to Native people?
To people that I recognize and my checkers recognize as Native, yes.
All right. You know, Bob...
I don't want to get into a big, long song and a dance about it. I'm primarily on to tell you that we are having a good weekend. It started out very, very well. And we do consider our Labor Day weekend in terms of retail sales to start on Wednesday. And that... we are doing well, despite the fact that we're not selling corn in the cob. So I don't know that I want to keep talking about this.
Yeah, but you keep bringing up things that are of interest to me, such as you're selling corn on the cob to people that you recognize as Native people.
That's correct.
And that includes some Hispanic people.
That is correct.
All right. So black folks, white folks.
Yes, they do not. We do not make corn on the cob available to them. We let the Hispanics know when they come through the door. By the way, if you want corn on the cob, please see our manager, Mr. Green.
So you're limiting the sale of this to just one group of people. I just think it's interesting. I don't mean to belabor the point. you know.
Well, yeah, I think you've done a pretty good job of it here, Phil. I told you why we're not selling corn on the cob. And
you yes, you did.
And you tried to tie it in with this guy that I borrowed money from. I borrowed money from one of these Indian places, and I got a good interest rate, and I told the guy that I appreciated it.
Did you promise to do something on behalf of Native American people?
I told the guy...
Boy. All right, we'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
877-876-PHIL is our number.
Call the Patriot Hotline now. 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Robert Green from Fraser Foods as we talk retail sales for this Labor Day weekend. We're also discussing, if you forgive me, Bob, I don't want to belabor the point, but you have stopped selling corn, all corn products, minus processed corn products.
I want people to know that we're still selling corn products that are processed, cornmeal, but we are not selling the corn on the cob. We think it's the least we can do for the native people who have suffered long enough looking at the conquering, if you will, the conquering European and African American and so forth, moving on their land at will and eating maize, which is the corn, which is the gold of the native people's agricultural efforts. And we sit on a Labor Day weekend and on a 4th of July and really just slobber all over their hard work. If I could say, if anything describes it best, we slobber all over the native people.
Well, do you not like corn?
I love it.
Well, you talk like a man that doesn't like it and is looking for a way to... boycott it.
No, that's not the case at all. No.
All right, well then, all right, let me take a phone call here. We have Russ in Greensboro, North Carolina. Russ, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Bob Green.
Hey, Phil. How are you doing today?
Good, thank you.
Bob, I mean, I don't understand it. I mean, how much money did this guy give you?
Look, I've been talking about this now for 20 minutes. If you don't understand it, then...
I know I understand it. I just don't understand. It's like you're a racist for corn. White people and black people can't get corn from you, but if you're an Indian...
Again, you don't understand what I've been explaining it for a half hour. Maybe you don't hear too good.
Well, explain it again.
I don't think anybody understands what you're...
You're speaking on behalf of who? You're speaking on behalf of who? Are you speaking on behalf of yourself?
Why don't you explain it again?
I already explained it.
I understand that, Bob, and I know you, but this man doesn't understand.
He understands. He's got nothing better to do tonight than bother me.
And Phil.
You got nothing better to do. Talk to me.
877-876. Bob, the question that I had for you, as that gentleman was asking, is the following thing. That is, why?
I explained it.
You didn't explain it to his satisfaction.
I think I did explain.
Not to his satisfaction, not to my satisfaction.
The explanation I gave was as follows.
There's a guy that lent you money, right?
There's a native man that lent me money from the Native American casino. They have a lending agency.
Okay.
And what are you saying?
You said the guy gave you a favorable interest rate if you can somehow work into the interview tonight something about boycotting corn.
He gave me a favorable interest rate. I don't think I said anything about boycotting or creating a boycott of corn. I'm not asking people to boycott corn. I'm saying I'm not selling it.
But this is all about this guy and this this loan, right?
I'm doing a favor for a friend.
All right. Let's go to Brad on the Phil Hendry Show. Go ahead, Brad.
Yeah. How you doing, Phil?
Good.
I understand that this man is trying to say that he is making an announcement about corn, and he's saying we're gonna not sell corn because it is a disrespectful to Native people. I understand that, but I don't understand the money thing. And Mr. Henry said it, and the other guy said it too. What has that got to do with it?
I already told you it has. It's not that it doesn't have nothing to do with it.
That's just it. It has something to do with it.
I didn't. Yes, you're right. He did me a favor by keeping the vigor, not the vigorous,
When you say vigorous, is this a loan shark or something?
No, it is most certainly not a loan shark. It is one of those, you've seen it on TV, the guy that comes on, and he has Native American, he looks like an Indian, because he's got long hair, but he's wearing a suit. Have you seen it, Phil?
No, I haven't seen it. What do you mean he looks like an Indian, he's got long hair, but he's wearing a suit? What does that mean?
Was a commercial that I saw where they were lending money. Okay?
Since when do you need money?
Boy, you really are getting nosy.
It's a good question, sir. If you own these supermarkets, whatever it is that you say you do, you would have the money, you know.
All right, I had a need to get some cash fast for a friend. And that friend needed to leave the country. I'm not going to get into why she needed to leave the country. She had to get out of the country. I got some money for her so she would get out of the country. I couldn't use my own accounts.
Boy.
Don't give me the boy.
Well, see, it sounds very shady, you know. And so that's why I'm...
There's nothing shady about it.
Well, you know, if you're sitting here telling me that you had to get some money and you couldn't use your own accounts and you had to borrow it from some Native American lending agency, and in return, this guy's asking you to not sell corn.
He's asking me to not sell corn because he and his family have opened up a co-op. And for just this weekend, I'm trying to get my hand.
All right, so Bob, what we've got here is this not selling corn by you started out as something having to do with the 200th anniversary of Native people, but in truth, it's to help out some guy who's got a co-op, and also to pay him back for the money that he's lent you at a low interest rate. And you have come on my program and have sold this to my audience as something that is in honor of Native Americans. I think it's a really low thing to do.
Well, you know what, Phil? I hadn't planned on coming on and talking about that. You insisted it. You insisted on it.
Of course he insisted. I wanted Mr. Henry to ask. I'm out here listening like everybody else, and I'm listening to you. You're not answering no questions. You're not telling anybody, well, why you did this, why you did that. You're just saying, well, you know, because it's disrespectful for Native people.
I got to tell you, your reasons for not selling corn are ridiculous. You know, people look like slobs. They're sucking the corn down. They're rubbing butter all over their face. It's disrespectful, you know.
Are you telling me that isn't so?
Go ahead, Brad.
I would like to say I think that what you say is true, but it doesn't bother me. People get, they rub the corn on their face. They rub it every place, yeah.
They rub it every place.
Yeah, they do. And it's because it's summertime and you're gonna get corn all over yourself. You're going to get corn all over the front of you and everything. You know, so that's a no-brainer, you know.
All right, I'm going to take a break here. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back here with Brad Rifkin. Well, that was Brad is on the line with us, with Bob Green, as we talk about the Labor Day weekend corn and the boycott of it. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show. Call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Welcome back. You're the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. On the line with me is Robert Green from Fraser Foods. And we thank Mr. Rifkin calling in from the ad agency in Las Vegas. I know we got Don Berman.
Yeah, Mr. Berman, line two is going to talk.
All right, I know Don Berman, and I know he was at a function for the Chamber of Commerce with me on the 4th of July.
All right, let's get him on the line. Don, how you doing?
Phil, I'm doing very well. I'm back from New York, and I did hear Mr. Green on your program, and I wanted to at least check in and give you a little background. And, Bob, how are you doing?
Well, I'm fine. I was telling Phil that you and I were at that Chamber of Commerce function together.
That is correct.
Newport Beach on the 4th of July.
That is correct. But what I saw that day, Bob, and I'm not here, and I don't think Mr. Hendry is here to embarrass you, but what I saw that day was a man uniformly enjoying the corn on the cob that he was eating.
What was that? Was that me?
Yes, it was you.
So you were eating corn on the cob?
Yes, I was eating corn on the cob. It's not that I don't eat corn on the cob. All right?
No, but what I'm saying is you were uniformly enjoying it. You understand what I mean?
No, I don't understand unless you're telling me that I was rubbing it all over my face, which I was not doing.
Well, I have to tell you that, yes, you weren't rubbing it all over your face. I don't really know what you mean by that.
No, I don't know what you mean by it either. Nobody intentionally rubs a corn on the cob, you know, all over their face.
Well, I'm sorry, but I beg to differ. I've seen these kids where they take the corn cob and they think it's funny.
I don't know what he's talking about.
Bob, what are you talking? Let's keep it within. If you're talking about little children, I don't want to go there. Let's talk about adults, and let's talk about their behavior at a dinner table. Now, you were with Mr. Green when?
I was with Bob Green, and I've known Bob Green for 5 years. We've been members of the Chamber of Commerce, and I was with him at the Chamber of Function on the 4th of July, Bob, right?
It was at the Balboa Bay Club in Newport Beach.
At that time, they had served corn on the cob.
Well, I don't. Can I interrupt here for a minute, Phil?
No, I want to hear what Don has to say.
If you don't mind.
I don't mind.
If you don't mind, I would like to finish what I'm saying.
I think it's not fair. You're a newsman, and you're going to talk like you think you're real important.
Well, I...
Bob, let him finish so that we can at least get some perspective from a different person. He says you were there eating corn on the cob, enjoying it.
He was gnawing on it. He was at points sucking the corn in without eating.
What do you mean?
Well, you're not eating, but chewing without chewing it. He was sucking corn. The point I'm making, he was sucking corn kernels in, and he made that comment at the beginning of the hour. I couldn't believe it because you know what you said when you came back for breakfast the next morning.
I was making a joke, Mr. Berman, and anything that you say, you get into some slanderous area.
Well, I don't think so. He came back to the breakfast table and said, he said he counted 50. And I asked him, what was he talking about?
Oh, for God's sake.
That's right.
I was making a joke.
I think any man that goes into the bathroom in the morning and counts the corn kernels enjoys corn on the cob.
How could you? Boy, that is the most asinine thing I've ever heard.
But I'll tell you something, Bob. The most asinine thing I've ever heard is a guy coming back to a breakfast table after taking care of nature's call and saying, I counted 50.
Yeah? You counted 50 what?
You know what you were talking about. And then the whole reason why we're discussing this is because you had this claim that you didn't want people eating corn on the cob. It was disrespectful. What we've been able to determine here, thanks to Mr. Berman and some other people, is that you've stopped selling corn at your store to pay back some guy that lent you money, and not only that, but also to help him get his co-op going. Is he selling corn?
He's a Native American, Phil. Of course he's selling corn. He sells corn because he has respect for it. And
don't you have respect for it?
No, I don't. I do have respect, but I can't have the same respect because I'm not an Indian. I can't respect it. I like it, but I eat it the way that I eat it. And to the point that Mr. Berman was making, when he says that I was sucking it down and not even chewing on the corn kernels, that's because I'm a white man, and I don't have any respect.
I've never heard anything. I've been a journalist for 30 years. I've never heard anyone talk in the manner that you're talking. You sound like an ass. You sound like you're making this up.
I sound like I'm making it up.
Yeah, you do. You sound like you're making the whole thing up as a way of coming on the program and, oh, yeah, by the way, we're not going to sell corn. You owe a guy money. You're doing a guy a favor. Why can't you come out and say that? And I don't know what kind of business hit you're taking by not selling corn. What kind of... You say the business is good.
Business is fantastic.
So it doesn't make any difference whether you're selling it or not?
No, it doesn't. You want me to tell the truth? I'll tell you the truth. Yes, of course, I feel it, but I don't feel it as... I feel it, but I don't feel it as bad as I would feel it if I didn't get this money paid back. Okay?
Okay, now we got the truth, don't we?
Yeah.
Well, you're asking for the truth.
You know, two nights in a row, I've had people break down and start crying at the end of the hour.
Can you blame them? What are you crying about?
I'm crying because I don't want to have my thumbs broken like Paul Newman in The Hustler. I don't want to be pushed against the glass door and go, rah! As someone bends both of my thumbs back and breaks them. That's what I'm crying about, and that's what I didn't want to bring up with Mr. Henry, and that's what I didn't want to talk about with Mr. Henry. I wanted to talk about my store and the retail business we're doing, but Mr. Henry kept pushing and pushing and pushing until there wasn't anything left anymore. And all I wanted to talk about was my store.
2 days in a row.
No, really?
Yeah, 2 days in a row I've had people bawling. Last night, Father McCorders was bawling because he needed a drink.
What do you mean?
He was in some sort of an alcoholic, in an alcoholic rage. He wanted a drink.
I can tell you that. Not an alcoholic. I want a little bit of understanding, okay?
A little bit of what?
Understanding! Well, Phil, I didn't mean to call your program.
Oh, yes, you did.
No, I did not, Mr. Green. I didn't mean to call Mr. Henry's program and create a situation where you would be embarrassed or that you would be seen as a dishonest man. But I think these are questions that need to be asked. And I believe Mr. Henry and myself and others have asked them.
You don't get it, eh?
You know, Bob, you better just lay down and call it a day, okay? Because you're not even... I can't even understand anything you're saying.
I'll talk to him.
Put him on hold and let's talk to Don Berman at least. We have Don on the line with us from Los Angeles at Channel 19. So, Don, what you heard there is a guy under pressure.
There's no question that Mr. Green has gotten himself involved in a situation. He must need the money. I didn't think he did. I have covered Bob Green, and when I say I've covered Bob Green, I mean from a news standpoint. He's been involved in the expansion of a great many stores and a great deal of business in Southern California and across the Southwest. But the trade-out is that Bob Green always seems to find his way into some illegal or quasi-legal maneuverings. And tonight, I think you heard a man who is on the edge.
All right, so I have seen these commercials where people borrow money, and I've seen the Native Americans pitching. These are legitimate businesses.
Oh, absolutely, they're legitimate businesses. They are very, very upfront when they say that the interest rate is very high. In other words, the money's expensive, I think, is the way they put it. But they're very clear that if you pay the money back quickly, then it won't be as costly to you, and the money is available right away. I don't know if that's what Mr. Green was involved in. It sounds to me as if he was involved in some way with an individual, a rogue individual. And
in other words, an individual who may have represented himself one way and is not...
No, it's not that way at all. And to come up with this whole, and you've heard him break down, it's a nervous breakdown. And I feel for it, but I have, like I said, I've been covering him for a long time.
All right, Bud, what do you want?
I've got him back on line two.
All right, we got Bob Green back here on line number two. Bob, you know, I don't know what else you can say, okay? We had to hang up on him.
Well,
but you can tell the guy's out of control, huh?
Well, he said he wanted to say something.
I don't give a damn if he wants to say something. The guy is a blathering... He's in a blathering kind of condition, okay? Anyway, I thank you very much, Don. You are coming back to Los Angeles?
I am going to be back in Los Angeles, but as you know, from my reporting in New York, I am hopeful that I have landed a local news reporting job in New York City, and that I'm very hopeful I'll be starting that job on Monday.
So you've gotten the job?
I am hopeful that I've gotten the job. I'm hopeful that I will be starting. I'm planning on starting Monday.
Have you been given the official go-ahead?
I have not been given any official word, but I'm sure that I will get the word, so I'm going to go ahead and move. And I've already given my notice. And
you haven't gotten the official word.
Phil, don't harsh my buzz, as the kids say, all right? Don't rain on my parade. I've got the job. I know I've got the job. I'm a positive thinker. I've got the job. I've got the job. I've got the job. I've got the job. That's all I keep saying, and that's positive thinking, and that's how you get a job.
All right. Congratulations.
Thank you.
But you're the one that...
No, I recognize that, but I've quit. I've given my notice. I'm moving tonight. I have loaded a Ryder rent-a-van, and I'm leaving in an hour.
And you're going to drive all night, huh?
I'm driving all night. I'm driving through the desert at night. You know a better way of making through the desert in the middle of summer or at the end of summer?
No, driving at night's a good idea.
You better believe it. So I am driving through the desert tonight, and I'm hoping that by morning I will make maybe Twin Falls, Idaho, or somewhere in there. But I'm leaving. I'm going to New York, and by God, they better have a job ready for me.
Good luck.
See, that's more negative thinking.
All right. In any event, good luck. We'll be back. World famous Phil Hendry Show. Jeff Dowder coming up.
Phil Hendry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch. Wow. And we go through the looking glass. What was that, bud? That was another one of your iTunes?
Yeah, I'm downloading.
Well, don't download while I'm on a show. Anyway, going places other talk shows wish they could. Well, some nights they wish they could. 877-876-PHIL is our number, and a very pleasant and profitable and whatever the hell morning to you. Let's see. We have Jeff Dowder, who's going to be joining us. Jeff is works weekends part-time at Caltech as a professor of mechanical physics. He's going to be joining us to talk about another trapped individual, this time a lumberjack. And this man was trapped and apparently... Cut off his toes.
You kidding me, man? How are they going to make a movie out of that, too?
I don't know. Here it is. John Hutt used a 3-inch pocket knife to sever his toes from the machinery after realizing no one heard his cries. A 61-year-old retired logger was forced to cut off his toes to free himself from after his foot was pinned under his 6-ton trailer.
Six-ton
trailer. Alone in a remote forest and fearing death if he did not get free, John Hutt used a 3-inch pocket knife to cut off all his right toes. All of his right toes. It hurt so much. No, he said it hurt so bad, which is a song by Little Anthony and the Imperials, too.
I don't know that.
I shouldn't make a joke, the guy. Well, he did it on purpose. If he'd lost his toes and it wasn't his, you know what I'm saying?
Well, are you saying it's okay?
Never mind. So, it hurt so bad, Hutt said, I would cut for a while and then I had to rest. Imagine that, cutting off your toes. Okay, that's 3 of them gone. Okay, let me just take a breather here, have a cigarette. I only got 2 more toes to go. Oh, man! He says here that he wrapped his foot in a shirt and drove for his ordeal was first reported in the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel. There's something wrong with there's a typo there. Anyway, Hutt, who runs a crane business and goes logging for fun... He'd gone to the woods by himself on August 19th to retrieve a pile of fallen aspen trees to cut for winter firewood. A trailer attached to his truck slipped and landed on his foot. He said he began to cut his toes half an hour later when he realized no one could hear his cries. 30 minutes? 30 minutes? Well, I guess I've never had my foot trapped in anything quite that bad, so maybe that's all it takes is 30 minutes. He couldn't reach the mobile phone, which was in his truck and out of range anyway. He had told his wife he would be back in several hours from a job 50 miles away, but he did not know when she might start searching for him. I cut off my boot to see my foot, and once I realized how bad it was, I started cutting off my toes. Once freed, Hutt drove toward his home outside Montrose, about 175 miles southwest of Denver. He called for help once he had phone reception. An ambulance met him on the way. His severed toes were retrieved and taken to the hospital, but were too mangled to be reattached. They told me there was no hope for them. They said there was nothing to attach the toes to, he said. Instead, doctors sewed his foot shut and wrapped it in bandages. Doctors warned him he may face more surgery. All right, here's Jeff Dowder from Pasadena tonight. And Professor Dowder, how are you this evening?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
You heard this story of this man in this logger in Grand Junction. I guess this is Colorado, who cut his toes off.
I heard it.
Do you? What do you make of this? And what do you make of the you know, you deal in physics, and that is force and in this instance weight and these kinds of things. Is there any way for an individual to extract themselves? I realize it's a ridiculous question given, you know, all the hypotheticals. But the gentleman that had his arm trapped, that they made the movie 127 Hours about, and this gentleman, are these guys acting too hastily?
Well, I don't think in the case of the hiker that you were referencing, the man who they made the movie about, at this particular time, I'm not sure I know, can remember what his name. I don't think in that situation, I think that they probably did, he probably did, the right thing to do, given his situation, because his arm was trapped and he was... at that time, I believe he had lost circulation. He said that the arm was evidencing some signs of a putrefaction, which seems very, very stark and extreme to most of us. But that's really when the arm or when a flesh,
begins to rot or decompose.
That is correct. And certainly it is life-threatening, given the fact that you can get a number of, like a blood disease or whatever, you want to call it, the thing what you're going to do. And so that's how, and so I do believe that. Now, in the case, and he's a younger man, he was a younger hiker, he has no reason to hack his arm off and go riding into town and going, hey, I cut my arm off, let's go make a movie about my life, and in a situation where this man that you're talking about, this logger, you've got a lot of factors that are not quite adding up for me. Number one, he's an older gentleman. I think he says 61 or something like that.
That's correct, yeah.
I think at that particular point in life, you get a little desperate to try to make your move, And I think it's possible. I'm not saying he did, but it's possible he's trying to make a move.
And what do you mean, make a move? What does that mean?
Well, I think when you get to a certain age and you haven't really hit the big home run, you haven't made the big dollars, maybe you sort of come up zeros in a lot of your business dealings, and nothing's really panned out, and you're still just sort of stuck in your middle-class world, you got to bust a move. I mean, as they used to say in the 80s, you got to bust a move. So, in my opinion, he's probably, and again, it's just my opinion, this is a guy that's ripe for to bust the move.
And he was ripe for to bust the move.
Yeah.
Okay. In other words, this man is faking this.
I believe that all of the particulars that you just laid out there, Mr. Henry, they don't add up.
So the man's... Well, you can't fake cutting off your toes.
No, you can't fake that, no. But you can fake, because there was nobody there, the reason why you cut off your toes.
All right, why is he going to cut his toes off? Tell me again how this is busting a move, as you put it.
Well, I think... Are you serious? I mean, look what happened to the guy that had his arm pinned. The guy that got his arm wedged, and I believe it was wedged, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Henry, did it get wedged or pinned?
Did it get what?
He's actually going to get wedged or pinned.
Did it get wedged or pinned? I don't know. What do you mean, did it get wedged or pinned?
Well, what was it?
I think it got wedged.
Okay, it got wedged. All right. That means...
What do you mean, get wedged or pinned? What difference does it make?
Well, in other words, we're talking about the configuration of the arm. How is the arm configured?
How was the arm configured mean when it was pinned?
No, I mean, just how was his arm configured? Just look at your arm. You know?
Wait, how is my arm configured? You're talking about I'm looking at my arm.
Right. So when you look at your arm, how, and I realize it seems like an obvious question, Mr. Henry, but how would you say your arm's configured?
My arm, I have a hand.
Whoa. Calm down, man.
Yeah, you got to calm down. Well, I don't know what the gentleman means by how's my arm configured.
Well, but your arm's there, right?
Yeah, I got two of them.
All right, would you look at... we all have two. But look at your arm, and what is... Okay, you have an arm, you have what?
I've got an arm, I've got...
Yeah, but what do you have on it?
I've got a shoulder.
Okay.
I got an elbow, a wrist, a hand, and five fingers.
What else?
What else? I mean, I've got bicep.
Exactly. You've got bicep, you've got tricep, you know, you've got... You got sep. I mean, I'm not. I didn't take anatomy or anything, but you got, you know, tricep, bicep, sep, anything. If you want to call a sep, all right. That's a lot of musculature, and that's an awful lot for you to cut through using some kind of a plastic knife that you got at Dairy Queen. It's not gonna happen without.
Well, I don't think he was cutting his arm off with something like you couldn't possibly cut your arm off with a talking about a plastic knife from Dairy Queen.
Well, I think he had like a real knife.
I don't know. I mean, I heard conflicting reports. I heard reports that the gentleman in the 127 hour movie.
Yeah.
I heard he cut his arm off with like a plastic fork. He got it at soup plantation.
Oh, get out of here, man. You can't cut your arm. A plastic fork he got at a fork?
I mean, I'm sorry, a knife.
At soup plantation?
Or at spaghetti factory.
I don't know.
Yeah, I can get, look at, I'm not a guy that's into anatomy. I don't know anything about musculature or the skeletal structure of the human body. I can tell you right now, no way do you cut through and cut your arm off with a plastic knife you got at soup plantation.
Or that other place. What's the one called? Fresh Choice Buffet.
Yeah, Fresh Choice.
Whatever, man. Who cares if it's Fresh Choice or Soup Plantation or Spaghetti Factory? There's no way you're cutting your arm off with a plastic knife.
All right. Well, be that as it may. Be that as it may. What I'm talking to you about right now is deadly serious. I'm talking about the likelihood that that gentleman in the movie 127 Hour, he did cut it off. But a guy who is a lumberjack, he didn't.
All right, I'm going to get into your reasons why you think this man, the lumberjack, and his name, by the way, is...
James Hutt, right there. Here.
I got it, bud. Thank you very much for sticking it up my nose again, man. I keep telling you. Mr. John Hutt.
Man, you're in a bad mood tonight.
I'm not in a bad mood. I just don't want him sticking this thing up my nose, if you don't mind. Mr. John Hutt, a 61-year-old... logger. He's a retired logger. And we're going to talk here in a moment more with Jeff Dowder, Professor Dowder, and why he feels this man could be faking the reasons why he cut off his toes, that he could be making the whole thing up. Let's find out. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. We're talking about this gentleman in Colorado, Grand Junction, Colorado, who cut off his toes to free his foot from a trailer that had fallen on his foot. 6-ton trailer. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Be right back.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. Call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL, talking on the line here with Professor Jeff Dowder from Caltech. We've had another incident of someone being trapped and having to sever a body part. And it isn't like we, you know, wait for these things with bated breath. It isn't, I don't think it's like we have an epidemic of this kind of thing going on. But we definitely have, when it happens, we have a very curious and, dare I say, inspiring in some instances, heartwarming in some instances, and frightening set of circumstances. But, Professor Dowder, you don't believe that's the case in the case of Mr. John Hutt, do you?
Let me just say that I've got some doubts about Mr. Hutt, and the reason why I do have a doubt about it, on account he is a logger, he is a man that is a lumberjack. If you know anything about a lumberjack and the lumberjacking that they do, they are alone a lot of the time. This man, Mr. Hutt, told his wife, and I'm reading the story as carefully as I can, that he enjoyed going into the woods and just logging for relaxation. I'm sure that that is the case. I have no reason to doubt that. It does give you an indication that it's a very solitary, you know, it's a solitary pursuit. I think that it borders on, if I may be permitted to use the word, I think it borders on weird to say, yeah, you know, my hobby's logging. I think that borders on, if I may be permitted to say it, it borders on the weird. Because if you enjoy, you know, if your hobby is a log, or not, is to log it, and...
What do you mean, log it?
Well, I'm just using a shorthand that if your hobby is to go log, you know, to go log, and you know, there's probably a lot of juvenile jokes you can make about that, and...
yeah.
All right, bud, take it easy, okay?
I mean, you know, that believe me, Mr. Henry, I deal with college students every day, and... you know, I know we're going to talk about this in class on next week, and someone's going to say, well, you know, what do you mean by log? You know, but the fact is, if your hobby is, if you're a lumberjack, you're already in a group of people that I think we do want to keep an eye on. And
well, then why would you say something like that?
Well, lumberjacking is really a business where you're going in and you're cutting down trees that have existed for thousands and thousands of years, and you're going in and you're just hacking them down. It's very, like, non-productive. It goes against the grain and flows beyond the norm of the way, you know, just the whole, the way the trip, you know, of how the trip should be. And so...
I don't really understand what you're talking about, you know?
Yeah, sound like...
Would you shut up, bud? I'm talking to the guest.
Yeah, but...
would you shut up? I'm talking to the guest.
No, shut up, man.
You shut up.
Do both you guys shut up?
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, I mean, all I'm saying, you know, maybe I should shut up, because what I'm saying...
No, you're fine, Doc, but or Professor, I should say.
Well, if you want to call me Doctor, that would be... Well, I guess it's too late now, but I was going to say, people would think I'm a doctor, and it might give me a little more credibility of what I'm saying, but... Here's my point.
Let me just jump in. I don't want to call you something that you're not. My point is simply this. Lumberjacks go in and they cut down trees because there is a need either, you know, the United States exports a lot of lumber. I know we export lumber to Japan. It's not like it's a completely gonzo business. I realize there's a great many environmentalists that probably wish we didn't do a lot of the cutting that we do, but we do. Why would you diminish? Are you diminishing mentally the abilities of lumberjacks?
I'm not diminishing their ability mentally, but I am saying that it is a very, you know, if you'll permit me to say, it's a very squirrely, you know, it's kind of a, it's squirrely to go and cut down trees as part of how you chill, is what I'm saying. So let's take this man, Mr. Hutt. He goes into the woods. He say he had breakfast with his wife, and he goes into the woods. And he, you know, he goes deep into the woods. No one hears about him. No one knows anything. You know, no one knows what did he do and everything. Now he's deep down into the heart of a wooded glen, or I don't know where he was.
What do you mean a wooded glen?
Well, I'm thinking of where he might have been, you know.
Well, yeah, wooded glen, you know.
Bud, let me do it.
He's getting everything wrong.
Why don't you look up what a wooded glen is, okay?
Well, I mean, a wooded glen is, it's a
about a wooded beck.
Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, that's pretty funny, wooded beck.
Yeah, about Woody Woodpecker.
Okay, that wasn't funny.
No, way not funny.
You thought wooded beck is funny.
Okay, look. You guys do your one-liners with each other somewhere else while I talk to this guy.
Well, I'm talking. You're saying a wooded glen, okay? You could say a wooded Turner, because of Glenn Turner. But I don't want to make those jokes. You know?
Yeah, thank you very much. Let's just forget that, and let's forget about a wooded glen. You said that he went deep into the woods after he had breakfast with his wife.
Yes, sir.
Now, my understanding is he got into a truck, and he drove.
Yes, he did drive. My concern and my interest is how much was on foot. You can drive a long way, but you can't get lost really in a car, because cars have got to go on roads, and roads are things that were built by humans, and humans know what they did build, and so you can say to a human, did you build a road? I mean, where is it? Yeah, okay, I built a road there. Okay, so we'll know the road, you know?
Okay.
So at some point he had to be on foot. That's what I meant about him going deep into a glen. And
I don't know what you mean by a wooded glen. Would somebody look that up?
Well, what I mean by a wooded glen is there's drinking water, there is shelter, it's wooded. Generally, the wildlife that's in a wooded glen is less threatening. You don't find bears or skunk. There's very little skunk. There's very little wolverine or, you know, any of those kinds. Mostly it's squirrel type or a chipmunk versions of, and that's what you're dealing with, okay?
All right, so a wooded glen is there's water, there's cover, and there's chipmunks.
Yeah, I mean, pretty boy, you know.
But it sounds just delightful. So now he is...
Well, Mr. Renner, I'm not trying to be a smartass.
Okay, fine, but this isn't getting me any closer to why you think this guy faked cutting his toes off.
Yeah, get the definition of a wooded glen.
Hold on with your definition of a wooded glen.
Here's what I think. Mr. Hutt parked his truck on one fine merry day. That's almost like it rhymes. Mr. Hutt done parked his truck on one fine merry day. He went to the glen and...
And he was with a guy named Ben, and they took their pants down.
All right, I'm going to start throwing guys out of here one at a time. I'm going to start throwing bodies out that door, huh?
Are you kidding me?
Oh, get serious. We'll be right back. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil.
Mr. Hutt went... Oh.
Call the Patriot Hotline now, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
And welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show as we continue our discussion here with Professor Jeff Dowder from Caltech here in Southern California. Caltech is California Institute of Technology, Doc?
Again, I'm a professor.
I'm sorry, professor.
No, that's all right. Like I said, California Institute of Technology is our, if you want to, call it our Brainiac factory here in California. I love Caltech. I think the campus is beautifully situated in a very, speaking of a wooded glen, it's not in a wooded glen, right? It's in a wooded, it's a portion that has woods and everything. Caltech is a great school.
Where did you graduate?
Well, I graduated from MIT, but I'm originally from California.
Why didn't you go to Caltech?
Well, I wanted to go and just, that's a long story, and I don't know if you really want to. It has to do with, it's a very heavy story,
Well, I'm just, curious.
But it's pretty heavy. I mean, someday when you got, 6 weeks, I'll tell you. I mean, let me put it this way, man. It involves a little bit of acid,
All right. I don't need to hear it, okay?
You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, it involves a little bit of acid and a girlfriend that did massages for money,
Okay, I don't need to hear it, Professor. Thank you very much, sir.
All right, so someday when you got 6 weeks or, a year, I'll tell you all about it. But,
Okay, thank you, sir, and I caution my audience that we are not endorsing the use of psychotropics or hallucinogenics.
No, I'm not endorsing it. I'm just saying in my, own personal, journeys and explorations and everything, I've found, I'm not going to say, I know that you don't.
I don't want any endorsement of any drug use on my show, if that's all right.
I certainly understand that, Mr. Henry. I'm just saying that in my own personal journey, my spiritual journey, I've I've been down some fairly pretty trippy, roads, so.
All right, I'm sure you have. I want to stick to what we're talking about here.
Okay, I do have the, unless Mr. Dickman, or I forgot his name.
My name's Dickman, but I did get it, Professor Doubter.
Okay.
Excuse me, I'll direct my staff. What do you got, bud?
I got the, Mr. Professor Doubter told me to do it.
I don't care if he told you to do it. You work for me.
Well, but I told him...
I understand that, Professor. What did you do?
I got the definition of glen.
Okay, go ahead, read it.
A glen is a valley, typically one that's long, deep, and it has a glacial U shape. And
all right, let me do it, okay? God almighty.
Well, you asked him to do it.
Yeah, you want me to do it.
All right, I'm doing it now, okay? It's taking you too long. And by the way, Professor, I'll talk to my staff.
Right, I understand that, but I'm just saying probably if you've, were a little looser, if you loosen it up a little...
Thank you very much. I'll direct my staff. Thank you.
Okay, but I can tell there's a lot of tension going on.
That's real groovy. Thank you very much, and maybe I'll go get a massage or whatever the hell, but right now, I'm going to read this. Thank you.
Okay.
A glen is a valley, typically one that is long...
That's just what he said.
I know that. I'm reading it better, okay?
Wow.
Let me read it. A glen is a valley, typically one that is long, deep, and often glacially U-shaped, or one with a watercourse running through such a valley. Widow defines it as a Scottish term for a deep valley in the highlands that is narrower than a straw.
What's that?
I don't know.
You said you wanted to read it. And who's Whitlow anyway?
I'm reading it. I don't know who Whitlow is. The word is goidelic, glen in Scottish and Irish Gaelic, gloin in Manx.
Oh, okay, right there. Okay, that's where you get the confusion of gloin or gloid, and not, the juvenile thing you talk about, Mr. Aaron. I'm talking about the gloin is, we call it the groin. And what do we call the groin? That's that area between the leg and the trunk of the body. The groin, all right, the groin of any wooded area is a glen. That is the gloin or the gloid. Because it's the stupidest part of, if you go into a wooded glen, what is it? It's a valley, but it's U-shaped, so you've hit a dead end. So in a lot of ways, you've gloided,
Are you making this crap up?
I'm not making anything up, Mr. Henry. You wanted to know about a glen.
I don't care about the glen so much as I care about this guy who cut his toes off.
Oh, yeah. God, I forgot about that.
Oh, my God.
Well?
You guys are running around with the definition of a wooded glen?
I just said that's where he went.
Okay, so the guy went into a wooded area that is a U-shape that's got a dead end to it, and the cat went in there, and it's called a groin or a gloid or a gloin. What are you laughing at?
I don't know.
It is.
Well, it's called, I don't know what you're laughing about, because that's Scottish... It is gloin. It's a gloin.
Good, it's a gloin. Now let's get back to Mr. Hutt. He went into this valley, this wooded glen, this gloin, this gloid, this whatever you want to call it, and he, then what happens?
Well, what this man is claiming is that somehow in the midst of logging or doing all that, doing this dance that he said he was doing, which I don't buy for a minute, suddenly here goes this trailer down on his foot, pins a foot, and he has to take out a pocket knife and carve his toes off. And the quote, it hurt so bad I would cut for a while and then I had a rest. And I think you made the point, and very good point, at what you made, Mr. Henry, about how, yeah, sure, yeah, right, so you cut off three toes, you're like, okay, let me take a chill here and... have a good and plenty and smoke a cigarette, maybe see what the ball game's on yet, see what the Cub game's on. Oh, yeah, I've got two more toes to cut off. Are you kidding me? Are you serious? So that part there is also why, and again, this is why they call it a gloid, because people will, you went into a valley and it's a dead end, so you're a gloid. And
you know what? That's bull crap. That's a slang term used by idiots that has nothing to do with anything, and I wish you wouldn't use it.
Well, but you said it was a gloid. Floyd.
No, I did not. You guys are reading from a definition of a glen in which you state there is something called in Manx, in the language of Manx, whatever that is. Is that Welsh? Gloin. In Manx, glen is also to be found, meaning glen. It is cognate with Welsh. Okay. As the name of a river, it is thought to derive from the Welsh word glen, meaning clean or glended.
Glended what?
Oh, boy, are you guys funny.
I'm not trying to be funny. You.
But you said something about glen.
Keep going.
Keep going, I mean.
Yeah, keep going with this thing, because.
Oh, okay, so then the trailer falls on his foot. Then he carves his toes off. Drives, calls an ambulance, and he's all, yeah, wow. I mean, in my opinion, he made it all up because he's already a little bit squirrely. The fact that he relaxes by lumbering and
and going out to log.
Right. Okay, and that's number one. Number two, it's too close to the guy's arm getting cut off. That means to me it's a little monkey see, monkey do. And then finally, right, cutting off your toes, that is the least painful thing to do. I mean, even cutting your fingers off is more painful. He's cutting off his toes, so he made it up. They're going to find out that he made it up, and then his insurance isn't going to pay, and he's going to be without any toes. He's going to be basically without a foot. The insurance money won't come through. His wife's going to get laughed at the supermarket. He's going to be limping around. They're going to go, there's the guy that cut off his toes to try to have a movie made about his ass. And nobody gives a sweet, you know, no one gives a sweet rip. And so, you know, I you know, that's what I think. And that's why I took so much time talking about Glenn, because this is pretty cut and dry meat.
Say that again?
I said, that's why I took all the time talking about Glenn, because pretty cut dry meat.
Yeah, cut dry meat too.
Cut dry me?
It's pretty cut and dried to me.
Well, then why don't you guys talk clearly, cut dry me? So you believe that...
I thought I was being clear, Mr. Henry.
So you believe that this man cut his toes off on purpose?
Yes, sir.
That there wasn't any trailer that fell on him?
No.
That don't you think that there would be some evidence of the foot being... don't you think there'd be some evidence of the foot... having been crushed?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that, you know, it's easy enough to take a sledgehammer or something and smash your foot. It's easy enough. I mean, there's a lot of ways you can fake it, but nobody is going to say, oh, wow, you know, you killed somebody. No one's going to say you molested a kid. All you did is cut off your toes like a retard. You know,
we don't use that word on the show.
I'm sorry. But, I mean, you cut your toes off and you're hoping they're going to make a movie about your ass. No way, no way, no way. Ain't going to happen.
Well, I will tell you this much, Professor. It's an interesting premise, one that I'm going to be interested in seeing now unfold. Usually a story like this, you feel for the guy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you really do. You've got a lot of sympathy for him. And, you know, but I'm looking at a lady right now, ABC News. Her name's Ann Compton. Have you ever seen her?
No.
She's got a nose that just almost goes straight up to the ceiling. Now, you got to ask yourself, was a trailer dropped on that? No, of course it wasn't. That's her face. But is it reasonable for me?
That's an insulting thing.
No, wait, hold on for a minute.
That's an insulting, idiotic, juvenile thing to say.
What?
That a trailer was dropped on her face.
Have you ever seen her nose?
Dude, I don't need to see her nose. I know who Ann Compton is. Thank you very much for joining us, Professor Doubter. And I will tell you this. I'm going to be very interested. I hate having to struggle with guests, and I apologize if I was short-tempered.
Well, you know, Mr. Henry, part of it's your staff.
Well, it may be part of my staff, but also you are very difficult to talk to because I'm trying to stay on track, and you're directing my staff, which a lot of people do, and I'll have to talk to Bud about that. Nonetheless, what you have talked about here tonight is very interesting, and we will follow it to see if, in fact, Mr. Hutt did get his toes caught by way of an accident, and he was able to extract himself from this situation in a very painful but courageous way? Or was it set up? Did he set the whole thing up, cut his toes off just so he could get a little bit of the world's love? Thank you very much. That's Professor Jeff Doubter.
You know, Bud, I'm losing my throat here, huh?
Well, I didn't do nothing.
Yeah, you did do something, man. Give me the definition of a Glenn. Don't be doing what he tells you to do. I don't give a damn if you think it's a gloid. It says gloin. And you guys start off with all the jokes, and we never get anywhere. All right, Phil Henry's show here, 877-876-PHIL. And Pastor William Rennick is going to be joining us, I believe, next hour, as well as Emery Clayton and another professor from L.A. Canyon College, talking about an interesting situation. A man allegedly threw his son off of a boat. He says he was kidding. He says he was playing, but he threw the kid off the boat and freaked a lot of people out. We'll talk about that coming up here. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show. Call the Patriot Hotline, dial 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-7445.
Don't argue with me. Just do it.
Yeah, but you want to know what a gloin was.
I don't care if he wanted to know what a gloin was. What is it with you guys, when I get guests on here, you guys do what the guest asks you to do. You don't do what I ask you to do.
The man, yeah, you want us to be polite, though.
Yeah, be polite, man, but don't all of a sudden turn it into the Professor Jeff Dowder show. What do you mean he wanted to know what a gloin was? You guys didn't even know what a gloin was until you read, and that's something else. I keep telling you, don't you ever go to Wikipedia for a definition.
Oh, wait a minute, man, that's wrong. A lot of people use Wikipedia.
I don't care if a lot of people use Wikipedia. There's an example of what I'm talking about right there. A lot of people do it, huh? A lot of people do it? If a lot of people were jumping off the freaking bridge into the river, would you do it?
Well, dude, why would they be doing it?
Maybe they've gone mad. Maybe they've turned into human lemmings. Maybe they've decided to just go ahead and throw themselves into the river because they're being idiots. Maybe they're in the middle of some flash mob. I don't know.
Well, for the flash mob, I probably would do it.
Really? Talk about monkey see, monkey do.
Ha ha, monkey see, monkey do. You saying that because I'm black?
Yeah, that's right, Robert. That's why I said it, because you're black. That's right. That's right. You believe that?
No.
Okay. I said it because everybody in this country, in this world, everyone is geared the same way. People are all geared the same way. Oh, we want to, so there's strength in numbers. We don't want to stand out. We want to be a part of the crowd. We want to be a part of the mob. We don't want to be anything other than acceptable to everybody. So when some jackass does something and everybody else does it, well, we want to join in. And I'm just telling you that that isn't always the way to do it. You say everybody goes to Wikipedia, good for them. I'm sure they're making a very good effort at Wikipedia to put together something that's, whatever you want to call it, scholarly. But they got a long way to go for me. 90% of the definitions and information you find there is not even cited.
Is that what it means by citation needed?
Yes. What that means is somebody made a claim, we don't know if it's true or not.
Yeah, but if you know that, at least you can take that into consideration.
That's fine. Why don't you go to a place that's fully footnoted? What about that? Why don't you go to an encyclopedic, into a website that is an encyclopedia that has footnotes, that is fully cited, and that they know what they're talking about? What's with Wikipedia?
Every time you find something, they got a definition there.
Yeah, they do have a definition there, but it isn't always the right one. It may be information that is not correct, you know. Then that reminds me, I want you to get somebody to clean up the one on me in there, because they got one about Phil Henry, they got one about the Phil Henry Show, they got Henrypedia, they got, as usual, it's like a mess, okay?
What do you want me to find somebody that'll do it?
Yeah, let's find someone that knows how to navigate Wikipedia so they can, you know, do the definition there, or at least give the correct Wikipedia entry for me and for the show. I mean, that's all I'm asking. I don't think that's asking too much. You know, we don't want to have...
Well, did you find information there that's wrong?
I did once.
Well, how long ago was that?
It was a lot of years ago, but...
Well, see, they've probably done it better since then.
Now, they have... They got a lot better at making sure the stuff will go in is the right one.
Yeah, I know they have. I know that they're making efforts all the time. I'm just, you know, I want to make sure that... there's nothing in there not so much that, I just would like it to be finished. It looks like it's unfinished. It looks like there's all kinds of stuff. Because people have gone in there, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? There's all kinds of people that that want to harm the show. They want to do us harm. I don't know why it is. I don't know why it is we need to be punished because we want to, A, enforce a copyright on our material, and B, because we tell it like it is to some people who claim to be fans. So we tell them to F off, and all of a sudden this becomes like every fan has been insulted. No, that's not the case. Quit being so tender in the ass. We were only talking to a few people. And secondly, I don't see how it is we have to be threatened and we have to have Neil Rogers, that memorial page, was defaced by some ass because he's pissed off at me because I wanted to enforce the copyright on my material. So he goes over and he craps all over Neil Rogers' memorial page. And, of course, all that did was get him hated and kicked off the page, and he doesn't care. I mean, these people have got no conscience, no morals. They're not funny. They're not interesting. They follow me around because I'm the greatest thing that's ever happened to them, and I disappointed them somehow.
Well, you just got to live with a lot of that stuff.
I understand that. No, I'm not. I don't doubt that. I'm just saying at some point, we don't have to do it today, but at some point, we might want to get in there and clean that up. All right, Grammy-winning rapper T.I. stepped off a luxury motor coach on Wednesday evening to start serving the rest of his time in a halfway house for a probation violation with a new book deal and TV reality show waiting for him. The artist, whose real name is Clifford Harris, earlier left the Forest City low-security prison in Arkansas, and was driven to 375 or so miles to the bus in the bus with dark-colored windows followed by four other cars.
Like the president.
Almost like the president. Dressed in a red and blue striped polo shirt and white shorts. Red and blue striped polo. T.I. stepped off the bus with his entourage to check into the halfway house. The storm is over and to sun back out, it's our time to shine. Shotty, the rapper, posted on Twitter shortly after his release. Welcome to the beginning of our happy ending. T.I. had initially served about 7 months at the prison in 2009 after he was arrested for trying to buy unregistered guns and silencers from undercover federal agents. He was on probation after he was released in order not to commit another crime or to do other bullcrap.
That one too?
I don't know. They lost the next page. Anyway, so that douchebag is, he's going into the halfway house. I read a thing, you know, the Mel Gibson thing has been settled. Mel Gibson and this woman.
Yeah.
And I read where the judge said to them, and I thought it was fantastic. He said, not going to be any books written. There's not going to be any interviews given. There's not going to be a movie about it. There's not going to be a movie in a week about it. You guys are going to do this and you're going to do that. And you're not going to involve yourselves in any publicity or any other shenanigans. And I was thinking, that's a fantastic. They ought to fit that into every single solitary order, every single sentence that they give out. No making money. Nothing. Now, I know we have laws against it here in California. Well, I'll be right back to talk more about it.
You talked too long.
I know.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
And it is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Lots of news to get to tonight in our News and Information Hour. Mel Gibson and his former girlfriend have reached a custody agreement. Real Housewives of Beverly Hills to air with suicide prevention announcements and other things. On the line is Little Ian. We have with us Little Ian Anderson, who's a resident now of Atlanta, right, Ian? You moved to Atlanta?
Right, yeah.
When?
Well, I moved probably 2 years ago.
2 years ago. Now, were you talking to Dan?
Yeah, I was talking to Dan. And because I heard what you said, you know, about the Shire. And Annie Richter said he would kill himself if he lived in Shire. And I called up. I want to talk to Dan. And he said to talk to you.
And what were you and Dan talking about?
Well, I told him, mostly, I said that you're not going to Hobbit, that living in Shire, they're not going to kill themselves because they're
happy, right?
Right, they're happy, and they're not going to kill themselves. You're not going to kill yourself if you live in a Shire. You're not going to kill yourself. If you live in a Shire, you're not going to kill yourself, even if you're not a Hobbit.
Well, what if you're a human? If you're Andy Richter and you're in the Shire, you don't want to kill yourself?
No, you're not going to kill yourself because everyone's happy in the Shire, right? And everyone's like happy, and everyone like has a job, and everyone has like a place, right? They all have their place in the Shire, right?
Yep. Okay, so if Andy lived there, he wouldn't want to kill himself.
No, he's not going to kill himself. And besides, like I was Dan was saying to me, I was saying that they're in the Shire, when they go to like a tavern, you know, have ale, like a hobbit ale, you know.
They have what?
They have like a hobbit ale, you know. They have like a mead.
Hobbit ale.
Right.
So they drink.
Right, they drink, like in a movie, sort of drinking.
That's right, they did drink.
It's like a hobbit ale, or like a mead, you know. And
well, now, how do you know it's hobbit? I guess the hobbits make everything themselves. So, is it powerful?
Oh, right, it's probably powerful, right. It's probably knock you right on your back, you know. I bet you'd probably take a human, like Andy Richter. And, of course, it's all made up, you know. It's all made up. I'm not really saying, I don't really believe there's hobbits, you know.
No, I know you don't believe there's hobbits, but we're theorizing here you know, everyone's happy in the Shire. Even if you're a human being, you're happy in the Shire. And they have hobbit ale.
Right. Well, so what I would think would be hobbit ale. That's what I said to Dan. I said, it's probably hobbit ale. He says, well, why you say that? I said, because they make everything themselves, you know. The hobbits make everything themselves. You're importing or buying, you know, from China, you know, someplace like that, you know.
You're not importing it from Mordor or
right.
You're not buying. Well, I guess they buy it stuff off the dwarves.
Right, you know, it sounds like we talk about this, but I'm not trying to say that I believe that these people exist, right?
Okay.
But if you were talking about whether you're happy in the Shire. It's mostly probably you do. You drink a hobbit ale, and plus they smoke probably some kind of hobbit weed.
You know? Hobbit weed.
Right. Like
like marijuana.
It's not like marijuana. It's not. They're not going to have the same kind of vegetation. It's probably not like marijuana. No. But
Well, what? So is it cannabis?
Well, I don't think so. It's probably like some other sort of dope, you know, hobbit smoke, you know.
Hobbit weed.
Well, hobbit dope, you know, hobbit smoke, the hobbit wanna, you know. Like they call it marijuana, you got hobbit wanna.
Hobbit wanna. Well, why do you think that what they're smoking there, and the only guy that I know that Bilbo.
Like Bilbo Baggins, he probably got, you know, rat ass on that, you know. So Bilbo Baggins probably looked at a state of him. He's probably like rat ass, right? You know, he's probably got rat ass on a hobbit ale and smoking a hobbit wanna or hobbit dope, right?
He's getting his rat assed?
Right, he's probably got rat ass, right? You know, and they have to carry him home, right, to his tree stump, right? And because all the hobbits, you know, they live in a tree, right? And so if you got angry, you set fire to the trees, you burn all the hobbits out.
Okay, you're getting a little weird on me now, man.
Really angry at the hobbits, you know. But that's what I would do if I got really angry at the hobbits, you know. I'd go and set fire to the trees, and set fire to all their homes, burn the hobbits out. They're trapped inside they'd be trapped inside a tree stump. you hear the hobbits screaming, right?
Oh, get him out of here, will you?
I didn't do anything.
God, is he weird.
What'd he do?
Oh, he's talking about burning the hobbits out of their tree stumps. Screaming and hobbit wanna. Do they get high? They're smoking hobbit dope.
Yeah, that's he was telling me about that. It said Dan told him too.
Yeah, but I didn't know. Was he talking to Dan about burning the hobbits out of their tree stumps? Because he was sitting there all laughing like it's cool.
Man, he must be losing his mind.
Losing his mind? That guy's never been right, ever. I'll tell you one thing. He's in Atlanta now? When did he move down there?
About a year ago because his sister's down there.
His sister's down there? Somebody ought to tell the cops in Atlanta that Little Ian's in town, man. And,
if you're a hobbit, man, you better fireproof your stump.
If you're a hobbit, fireproof your stump.
Yeah.
You know, you're right, man. If any of you hobbits living down in Atlanta, man, and you're living inside the stump of a tree, fireproof it. Oh, my God. Mel Gibson and his former girlfriend reach custody accord. After more than a year in court, Mel Gibson and his ex-girlfriend, Oksana Grigoryeva, ended a custody battle over their two-year-old child, Lucia, with an omnibus settlement, much of which was described by a Los Angeles County Superior Court judge at a hearing on Wednesday. Included in the financial terms of the agreement would be that Mr. Gibson would permit Ms. Grigoryeva and her daughter to live rent-free in a home that would ultimately be sold with the proceeds placed in a trust for Lucia's benefit at the age of 18. Under the agreement, Lucia, who will be represented by a minor's attorney, will share... I didn't know they had minor's attorneys. They've got attorneys that...
Well, yeah, they got to have a... Like, somebody's going to represent a little kid. It's hired, you know, probably by the court, you know.
Hired by the court. I guess the anyone representing a minor would stand to be paid in terms of contingency. I don't know. Nonetheless, under the agreement, this child is represented by a minor's attorney, will share equally with Mr. Gibson's other children in his estate, but she must waive any interest in a family trust that he previously established with his former wife, Robin. In effect, Mr. Gibson could thus disperse his fortune through the trust without leaving substantial assets in an estate that would be shared with this baby, Lucia. Wouldn't you, you know, that's wouldn't you feel a little dirty?
What do you mean?
Well, he's leaving his estate. This is, that is the, and I understand the law. It's, I'm not quibbling. I'm just, a father's love. You have a daughter, and here's this child that they're going to establish a new trust. So I guess in a way, he's saying, okay, let's now, here's Lucia, and we're going to start the trust now for her. We're going to sell the house. The proceeds go into this trust for her benefit. She's a two-year-old, which means 16 years will elapse between now and the time that that child is of age. Mel Gibson is not going to be a just dormant artist. Mel Gibson's going to continue to earn, even if it's royalties. But I don't know what happens to those royalties if that child is entitled to any of them. I don't know. And I'm one of these guys. You know what my problem is? I'll tell you what my problem is. I'm the guy, and this has been a problem. This doesn't make me a great guy. This makes me a jackass, and I've done this my whole life. I'm the guy who says, what's best for everybody? I'm always that guy, you know?
You probably wind up getting screwed, too.
There, you hit the nail on the head. You hit the nail right on the head. I'm always the guy that says, you know, whatever's cool is cool, baby. What do you need, huh? What do you need? Daddy's home, huh? Well, you know, it'd be easier if we... All right, let's go ahead and do that. And do you think anybody... And I'm not complaining. This is a lesson in life. That's all. It's just a lesson in life. Understand something, folks. And you probably, some of you, figured this out. It is human nature. It is human. It's not evil. It's not bad. It's just human nature to grab, 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 grab. So when you decide you want to compromise, you say, well, let's make it easy. No one's going to be giving you any brownie points. Please don't think that everyone's going to turn and say, oh, my God, what a marvelous person you are. That you just done what you done, you know.
Why'd you do it?
Why did I do it? I did it. Well, probably originally in my life I did it to get praise and to get somebody to love me or to get somebody to recognize me. I do it now in my life just so we won't have a damn fight, you know. Just so that I can cut through the horse dung and get something finished so that we're not involved in a protracted dispute. Now, this cat here, this Gibson, he's got a separate thing for her. If I'm the mother, and that would be very, very strange if I was the mother.
Yeah, but think of how cool it would be. You get a lot of money, too.
I wouldn't be getting that much money. If I was going to be a mother, I'd rather be... What are we talking about anyway? Anyway, so I would say, don't you think this daughter of yours is entitled to the mass of your trust, to which he would holler into the phone, you lousy, stinking Jew bitch, and then I'd hang up. Ms. Grigoryeva is also scheduled to receive three separate payments totaling $750,000, but she could lose some of that, or Mr. Gibson could face further penalties. If either violates an agreement not to discuss their relationship in public, the two are also specifically barred from writing or contributing to books or articles about each other, the judge said. I love this. Gibson's also expected to bear the brunt of the lawyer's fees that will reach into the millions of dollars and will provide a substantial monthly allowance for Lucia's support, according to a person who was briefed on the settlement but spoke on condition of anonymity, even though they shouldn't have, but they did, because people just can't keep their big fat mouths shut because of the sensitivity about privacy in custody cases. So you don't want to say what your name is because of the sensitivity in custody cases or because of the sensitivity in your life. As the custody battle unfolded, Mr. Gibson's latest film, The Beaver.
You're kidding.
No, that's the name of it. Mr. Gibson's latest film, The Beaver, sank almost without a trace.
Yeah, that's dirty.
No, it ain't dirty. I don't think. Anyway, Mr. Gibson's latest film, I bet you he tanked The Beaver just, you know.
Is it about that Leave It to Beaver?
Is it about Leave It to Beaver?
Yeah, I mean, it's about not leaving anything to the beaver, but the beaver himself.
You mean after the beaver's parents died?
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you think Mel Gibson would invest millions to do a movie about what happened to the beaver? You got to be putting me on.
I don't know, man. There's a lot of not enough good material. A friend of mine saying the writers, man, they need good writers.
Yeah, I'll say they need good writers if Mel Gibson's doing a movie called The Beaver. Anyway, as the custody battle unfolded, Mr. Gibson's latest film, The Beaver, sank almost without a trace as it took in less than $1 million at the domestic box office after its summer release by Summit Entertainment in May. Good God Almighty, Gibson, are you telling me the guy that made Braveheart, the guy that made The Passions of the Christ, the guy that made all those, Lethal Weapon movies, are you telling me that all of a sudden you forgot how to make a movie? You make a movie called The Beaver and it sank for less than $1 million? Why don't you get your head out of your ass and get back to making all those cool movies? You know what your problem is, Gibson? And I'll tell you right now what his problem is. Oh, well, you made The Passions of the Christ, so I guess you're an artist now. Is that it? Are you, who's the guy? What's that guy's name?
Which one?
That Italian. What's his name?
Fellini.
Fellini, yeah. I bet you Gibson thinks he's the American Fellini. Is that what you think? Well, you made yourself and that other piece of crap, that Apocalyptico or whatever the hell that thing was called, that sucked too. Get back to making movies like you know how to make them. Your little girl benefits from it. Don't tell me you're tanking movies on account of you got to pay this kid. That can't possibly be the case. Nobody's going to go see a movie called The Beaver, man, unless it's about, well,
Or
The Beaver. All right, we'll be back here, the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Real Housewives of Beverly Hills to air suicide prevention announcements, and a couple of them will be in the new Mel Gibson movie,
The Beaver.
All right, we'll be right back. Phil Henry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Henry Show. Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, welcome back here, the world famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, and he's talking entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. 10th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. Well, I was just looking at a C-SPAN schedule. There are a number of events that are going to be happening on September the 11th. It's the 10th anniversary, and it is a significant day. I'm not going to give a big speech about it. You know, if it means something to you, it should mean something to every American, and I'm sure that it does. What we're going to do in this show is not really much of anything. By that, I mean we're going to we'll do the show as we usually do the show, mindful of the significance of the day. We have usually when we start our show, or at least when we start 9/11, we play a montage of the unbelievably horrifying sounds that we heard that day, accompanied with the visuals, but this being radio. And we've done that every year since 2002. And we will do it again this year at midnight on September the 11th. That montage of horrifying things that we live through. And I think it's important, you know. I mean, I just do.
Why do you want to do that?
Because I think it's important to remember it. And we have an opportunity now like we've never had before. We document everything these days so fully. We document not just the events of the big historic events that affect the world, the big historic events that are in international and national news. We document our own lives. We document our street, our neighborhood, our jobs. You know, never has history been so thoroughly recorded, and I don't even know at times whether we're aware of what it is we're doing. So when this thing happened, it was absolutely upside down, one side, the other. I mean, we looked at it from every angle, and we've got it. And we've never had the opportunity to relive history the way we do today. We can get into a time machine anytime we want. You know, I told you, I've got that 100 years of New York Times front pages, and I can lose myself by putting that CD-ROM in and literally take a trip back in time. I become a man reading a newspaper in the year 1914. I'm looking at what the concerns were of the day. I'm looking at the international news. I'm looking at the local New York news. And you want to know something? It's all surprisingly similar to today. There's not a whole lot different, folks. There just isn't. Strikes, racism, police raids, murders, fires, the tragedy of losing a child, the tragedy of missing children, missing wives, missing people. It's all there. 100 years ago, today, no different. War. And the fear that comes with that. Budgets. How much is it going to cost today? How much was it costing yesterday? What are we going to do about how much this is costing and that is costing? You think that this is the only Congress and the only president and the only generations ever worried about that? You think this is the only time we've ever argued about health care? You know, people have talked about this during the debate over health care. You know, this is not the first time that we've been talking about this. They've been talking about it a lot longer than Harry Truman. You can go back 100 years and look at a newspaper, they're talking about it. Murder. Rape. Oh, yeah. Horrifying crimes. Horrifying crimes. No, people. You know, I know I've had my disagreement with Dr. Stone. I say, well, Dr. Stone, maybe we have more serial murderers because we just have a higher population of people. He says, no. I think there's something else going on. Well, there may be something else going on from this respect, that there's kind of what do they call that? An exponential increasing of a phenomenon based upon the rapidity of information. But people are people, and they don't change, and they act the same. Societies get better. That's the good news. People are equal, and people, you know, we all handle ourselves better, and we react better, and we contribute better to the society around us, and we raise our children better. But the challenges are the same, man. And that's the beauty of my little 100 years of the New York Times front pages. I can go back. I can time travel. I can go anywhere back to 1851 and see the same stuff that we're dealing with today. The same worries, the same crimes, and people with the same hopes.
People wearing the same clothes.
People wearing the same clothes. Well, not exactly.
That bowler hat?
Although I do want to get a bowler hat. If you want to give me something for my birthday and there's still time, get me a bowler hat, will you? One of those Laurel and Hardy hats?
You got it.
We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Join us at philhendryshow.com to watch live streaming video of our show every night, live streaming audio of the show available there, obviously, on the videos. You can also access our affiliate list. We have 130 radio stations for you to choose from across the country. They're always coming. They're always going. They're always going. They're always coming, if you'll pardon the expression. And they're a great, great list, a great group. and we consider them to be very courageous broadcasters.
Why are they courageous?
Well, why are they courageous? To let you on the air every night.
That takes courage.
All right. Professor Emery Clayton is joining us from L.A. Canyon College, I believe, and we're going to talk a little bit, Professor, about this story.
I think this is in...
Was this in California?
That is my understanding, yes.
All right. Now, this is the story of a 35-year-old father, an Irvine man, Irvine, California. Why does it say KPSP? What is that?
I have no idea.
No, I'm sorry. I'm asking my...
I think I got it from, like, a TV station in Nebraska.
Why would you get that story from a TV station in Nebraska? Never mind. 35-year-old Irvine man accused of throwing his 7-year-old son off a sightseeing boat in Newport Harbor defended himself Wednesday in a round of television interviews, saying he and his son were just, quote, screwing around. Honestly, what it was just boys roughhousing and then screwing around and then jumping off the edge of the boat. We were just screwing around, just showing off, just being guys. It's not like I threw him off. We went together. It was just like a hand-in-hand thing. Bryles denied reports that he angrily threw the child overboard because he would not stop crying. There was no hitting. There was no striking of any kind, no anger whatsoever. I put him over the edge, and then he jumped, and I went in right after him. I don't know where the anger came from because we were having a pretty good harbor cruise. The Orange County Sheriff's spokesman, John Amermino, said witnesses had an entirely different account of what happened. According to several witnesses, the boy was crying. He told him to stop crying, and he repeatedly slapped him in the face with an open hand. Others aboard the boat were so offended they began advancing toward Bryles to stop him. If you don't stop crying, I'll throw you overboard, Amermino said, Bryles told his son. Amermino questioned why Bryles struggled with sheriff's deputies if he was only engaging in horseplay with his son. Why did he become combative toward deputies? He was obnoxious. He was intoxicated. People on the boat said he had been a problem. I'm trying to see here. Is this the same? This is this TI guy. Professor Emery Clayton joins us from L.A. Canyon College in northern L.A. County. Professor, how are you?
Well, I'm doing very well, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you about this. It's a story that I think has garnered some attention that is not exactly the kind of attention that one would want. I don't think that people are accurately seeing this story.
And what are people getting wrong?
Well, what people are getting wrong is the fact that this was a man dealing with a crying child. Let's forget for the moment this man's story is they were engaged in horseplay. I don't doubt that the man, once he was confronted by the police officers, was worried that his story, that his reasons for doing what he did would not be seen with sympathy. And so he concocted perhaps a story that he felt might be more readily believed. But I believe that this man was acting in a manner that one would describe as defensive.
But defensive what? Toward the police?
Toward the police, yes, because if you have a young man of 7, and this child is crying, now we live in a day and age now where people feel it is their God-given right to present themselves, to insert themselves into the arguments, the discord, or otherwise the discussions of other families. In other words, we live in a day and age of the busybody. Now, here's a man who's trying to talk to his child. The child is crying. The child is acting up. The child is screaming. The child, in other words, is presenting a problem to the father who is trying to calm this child down. Now you have people on this boat who are advancing toward this man, telling this man, you may not speak to the child thus and so. And
people say that this man was slapping the child in the face.
People say a lot of things. I don't know if it's true or not, but what I do know is that the man panicked, recognized there was only one thing he could do in order to discipline this child and keep these people out of his face, and that was to pick this child up and throw this child into the Newport Harbor, which is exactly what he did. Now, he jumped in after the boy. And I believe he did that because he felt poorly that the child would be in the water by himself, and he wanted to jump in and continue his discussion, or if you will, his discipline of his child. But he wanted to get away from all of these people who were suddenly pressing forward and felt empowered to tell him what to do, how to live, and what time it is out on the street. Well, I can tell you something right now. Had I been that man, I would have done exactly the same thing. And
all right, Professor Clayton, I got to interrupt you. You're saying that this father, in attempting to discipline this child, was now being set upon by people on the boat who would not allow him to discipline the child in the manner that he wanted to discipline the child. And so he was, by throwing this kid in, he was attempting to get away from those people.
Yes, he was trying to get some privacy so he could continue his discipline of this child. Now, where are you going to get privacy on a harbor cruise in Newport? Are we not going to get any privacy anywhere? There's no place. It's a public craft. It's a sightseeing ship. There are people everywhere. And where there are people everywhere on this particular boat, this man was going to be encountering more of these, if you want to call them, Budinskis, people busybodies, looky-loo, rubberneckers. You know the type. You see them every morning on the freeway. You see them every night when you come home on a freeway, and you see them every day in the supermarket when you're trying to tell a recalcitrant child to shut its mouth, that you're trying to get something done, and here comes some rubbernecker. Going to look around the corner with that big, long rubber neck of his and, I didn't mean to butt in, but let me just tell you how to raise your child. I mean, these rubberneckers, you've got a body, the man is standing in one aisle, and his neck has stretched all the way around two aisles down with his head sitting there to look at you.
Yeah, that's very funny.
Well, I'm not trying to be funny. I'm telling you that...
Yeah, the guy's body is two aisles down and the neck stretched down.
I'm saying that that's what... In reality, in the mindset, that's what they're doing. It's not in reality. And they're doing it so effectively that you're almost delusional. You almost see the neck and the head come floating down the aisle. You understand what I'm saying?
No, I don't understand what you're saying, and it doesn't make any difference.
I'm saying that it is... These people are so good, Phil, at butting in.
No, I know. They're so good at butting in that you imagine seeing their neck stretching two aisles down and their head sitting there telling you what to do.
But you're not just imagining it. What I'm saying is you are delusional. In much the same manner that a child that has anorexia, a little girl that has anorexia, she is so delusional that she actually sees herself getting fatter after she eats something like an olive, you know.
Well, perhaps I haven't studied the phenomenon to that degree. What I'm saying, though, is, and what I'm asking you, is the problem as you see it is that there was nowhere for this man to privately discipline his child.
That is exactly what I'm telling you, and I'm telling you that as a result of that, turn here. I'm coming home with my wife. We were at a function this evening. Professor Galuli is retiring after some 27 years. He had been chairing the philosophy department. And we'd had a dinner with him.
Oh, okay. Was it pleasant?
It was very much. It was a wonderful time. As you know, Phil, I'm a African American, as is my wife, and I enjoy myself with my colleagues, even though a great many of them are white people, and I like white people. I don't have any racial animosity, but I'm more comfortable with my own people. But this was very pleasant to be around that many whites. And laugh as hard as I did. It was quite pleasant.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed yourself.
And I'm not being sarcastic.
No, I know that you're not.
You sound sarcastic.
I'm not being sarcastic either. I'm not. I'm just trying to avoid the topic altogether.
Avoid the topic of what? That I had.
Let's just keep it on the subject here of this father. Now the guy throws his
dog.
No, his kid. I thought it was his daughter. His son.
Into the Newport Harbor, and this was his way of saying, by God, I'll get some privacy even if I have to watch this. And he throws the kid in, and he jumps in himself. Now he can swim over to the child and continue to discipline this child. But what happened? Well, I'll tell you what happened. The Orange County Sheriff's Department, with their little harbor patrol, the little man there's got a boat and the little blue light, and it goes, wee, wee, and he gets to blow a horn. Now, those guys, I'll tell you, they really get to me. And
what are you talking about now?
I beg your pardon?
What are you talking about now?
I'm talking about the harbor. Have you seen the Orange County Harbor Patrol?
Yes.
They've got their little tugboat that goes around and around.
No, that's not a tugboat. That's a patrol boat. Why do you feel the need to mock them?
Well, because every time you turn around down in Newport Beach, there's a cop. I've got nothing against the police. I think the police are necessary. But my God, you can't even swim in the harbor there without seeing their little Orange County tugboat service with the little... Oh, boy. So anyway...
Boy, you know, it's one thing to make a point. It's another thing to gratuitously insult the police. These guys are there just doing a job. There were people on that ship, that cruise ship, that saw something.
Yeah, they saw something. They saw something they didn't like, and that was a man disciplining a loudmouth, screaming, screeching 7-year-old kid. Screeching and screaming and yelling and hollering and bellowing like a stuck cow. And they finally said, I can't take it any longer, and he's telling the kid to be quiet. Now, here's what I'm saying.
How do you know? Everything that you're describing to me sounds like you have a little bit of an issue with the kid. And
why would I have an issue with his kid?
Well, with any kid, because you're saying screeching and screaming. Have you got kids?
Phil, don't try to psychoanalyze me.
I'm not trying to psychoanalyze you, but what I'm hearing you say is it sounds to me like you sympathize somehow with a man who has to deal with a loud, quote, screeching, screaming kid, as you put it. So there he is with this kid. He's dealing with the kid. The people are coming up and they're butting in.
Yes, the people are coming up and butting in and saying, hey, yo, and this kind of nonsense. And if I were him, I would have done exactly the same thing. I would have said to them, look what you're about to make me do. This is your fault, not mine. And I'd pick the kid up over my head. And I want to be very, very clear. I would have that child over my head, and I would throw the child in much the same manner that Frankenstein threw Igor off the top of that windmill so many, many years ago in the classic James Whale film. Now, I am...
So you'd pick a kid up over your head and chuck that kid into the water?
Yes, but then I'd jump in too.
Don't you think you'd scare that child?
That child scared me. The child scared me by not paying heed to what it was I was trying to tell him, and then the child further scared me through his behavior that influenced these adults to come over to me and menace me. These adults would menace me as they menaced this man, standing there, taunting, punching their fists into their open hands, wrapping things around their fists as if to muffle the sound of a fist against bone, picking up instruments, sticks, rods, anything they can find, slamming them into the open palms of the other hand. You know what I'm talking about. And here's this man looking at a mob that could very well be out of control. And so he picked this child up, chucked the kid as far as he could out and away from the ship, and dove in after him to get away from a mob of maniacs. And I don't see anything wrong with that, Phil. And I think the police should reconsider the very harsh treatment they've given this man because, again, we're living in a time, Phil, where things get very, very confused.
Well, there's nothing confusing about what these people said they saw. These were witnesses now. They saw a man slap a child. They heard this man yelling at this child. This guy resisted arrest, according to the police officer, the spokesman for the Orange County Sheriff. This man resisted the sheriff's deputies that came to investigate. So I think there's an awful lot here that needs to be sorted out. And my hat's off to the people on that boat that did say something. I read a story about this guy, Alan Blackthorne. I've seen a lot on TV about this scumbag, and I also read the book about him. Ann Rule wrote a fantastic book about this guy, Alan Blackthorne. He's a real piece of garbage, a psychopath, who was married to a woman for a number of years. Eventually, she was able to get away from him, and she got custody of the two children that they had together. She moved as far away from him as she could. She moved to Tampa, Florida. But it wasn't good enough for a controlling psychopath like Alan Blackthorne. And this scumbag eventually hired some people to go and kill her. And kill her they did. But the good news, the happy ending to this, is that Alan Blackthorne wasn't able to lie his way out of this. He's in prison for life, and hopefully he will rot there when it comes time to rot. Now, one thing this guy did, And we're talking about people that have got a problem with impulse control. In the book, Ann Rule describes another marriage that Mr. Blackthorne had before this unfortunate woman who was murdered by him. And the woman describes an event on a freeway in Oregon where they were driving, and alongside Mr. Blackthorne's car came a motorcycle, a Harley Davidson, with two people riding on it. And something snapped inside this guy, Blackthorne. He couldn't take the sight of the motorcycle, maybe. He didn't like the look of the people that were on it. He didn't like the idea of motorcycles. Whatever it was, he got in behind these people. He floored it right into the bike, causing this thing to spin out of control and killing, I think, both people, or at least one of them, on the motorcycle. And one of the people bounced off the hood of his car and over the top, as you can well imagine. She watched this happen. She witnessed this happen. And he told her, whatever happens, you will say that these people ran into me. In other words, he already was going to, and he threatened her with the ultimate if she did not go along with this. Now, what struck me about that was the impulse control that some people have, that they just go out and they do something horrific and then they cover it up later. And a guy like this, it's a simple thing, just throwing a kid off a boat. You know, that kid could have gotten very seriously hurt. You hit water and you're going at any kind of speed, it's like cement. So let that be a lesson.
You want to keep Dr. Clayton?
Nah, get rid of Dr. Clayton. All right, we're going to come back here on a world-famous... Don't tell him I said that, though. We'll be back here on a world-famous Phil Hendry Show with a little more. We're going to wrap up Al Sharpton. GOP candidates are like the pre-1960s racist segregationists. Really? We'll be back with that on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Radio for patriots by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show. For patriots, by patriots. It's the Phil Hendry Show.
Representative Michelle Bachmann says it's absurd and ridiculous to think her comment regarding God using the hurricane to get the nation's attention was anything other than humor. Well, it's difficult for us to say that that's humor, Ms. Bachmann, when you're constantly talking about how much you love God and Jesus. So now you're joking? When you're talking about God, and you're talking about how important God is, and important Jesus is, and important your faith is, and important this, that, and now all of a sudden you're joking, it's a little difficult. You're not known for your sense of humor. Now, she says she's got a great sense of humor. Oh! Let me tell you something. I got a great sense of humor, and I ain't never heard you say one funny thing, Mrs. Bachmann. Not one funny thing other than when you talk about Marcus being your husband. I have to chuckle.
What's chuckle?
That's halfway between chuckling and heckling. Anyway, how's that for a save, man? Here is Michelle Bachmann as she talks about, the God hurricane joke thing.
Of course, it would be absurd and ridiculous to think that that was the intention of my comment. If you know me, you know that
we don't know you.
Loves humor.
We don't know you.
Great sense of humor. And I think it's important to exhibit that humor sometimes when you're talking to people as well. And if you take everything that a person says that's straightforward,
is that right?
You misunderstand the intent.
Exactly. Well, one thing you're known for, though, is you make things up. You've been caught more times than not making things up out of whole cloth. Do I like her? No, I don't like her. If you're a conservative, you shouldn't like her. If you're a Republican, you shouldn't like Michelle Bachmann. If you've got any hope at all of having the White House in 2012 as a Republican, you should fear this woman becoming your nominee. Honest to God, she's stupid. She may be a conservative, but she's stupid, and she's not even honest. And another thing.
Show's over.
Oh, the show's over. World-famous Phil Hendry Show is, it's produced by Dan Northcraft, it's produced by Chris Johnson, John Wyrick, Fred Scotty, and me, Phil Hendry. Join us online at philhendryshow.com, that's philhendryshow.com, where you can get a backstage pass and you can watch and love and enjoy all of the marvelous things we have there for you. Don't forget our ball caps coming into our merchandise store. We'll be at the NAB very, very soon in Chicago filing reports. Until then, adios.
Phil Hendry.